So we should have about a quarter of an hour until we start the Gemara inside. We began discussing yesterday a bris, a special bris that HaKadosh Baruch Hu established with Klal Yisrael. This is Gemara in Rosh Hashanah on Daf Yud Zayin.
In the Slichas.
And then we mentioned, but I want to get a little bit more into it, the Brisker Rav on a Pasuk in Parshas Shlach, which is, of course, the Parsha of the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachem, in the aftermath of Chet HaEgel. So the Pasuk reads the following, Slach no la'avon hazeh, ki godol chazdecha, v'kasher no sasolam hazeh, etc. Now, you can divide up this pasuk into two elements. One element is kigodol chazdecha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's forgiveness should be a great chesed. And then it says kasher nasas olam hazeh, which sounds like it's a separate unit in the pasuk. And then the pasuk goes on to say mitzrayim v'ad hena. So we have kigodol chazdecha. Kigodol chazdecha is a reference to the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim. And we have the bris.
Excuse me, I just want to get a... From the Kodesh, so I can see it.
Okay. I mean, this is a pasuk we know by heart. It's in Parshas...
Shlach, right?
I think so. Parshas Shlach. So let me just say the following. Okay. He's assuming, the Brisker Rav, that Kigodol Chazdecha is the Chesed the Rachamim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim. So now the question is, what does it mean when the Pasuk says, Kasher Nasos Olam Hazeh Mimitzrayim V'ad Heino? And the answer is that kasher nasasa, nasasa is almost like a prejudice, you know, a special relationship that I'm inclined towards you. Hainu im einam ru'uyim l'slach mitzad abris. If they're not on the level that Hashem should grant them forgiveness based on the bris, but nevertheless yislach lehem kmo she'nasal lehem mimitzrayim. Now, what's the significance of kasher nosalehem loma zemi Mitzrayim? In Mitzrayim, the people of Israel had no bris. And not only that, absent was the covenantal relationship, and also there was no zchuyos. We really didn't have any merits. Right? Like the famous medrash, halolo of the avodah zarah. So it comes out that based on the experience of Mitzrayim and God's compassion on the Jewish people in redeeming them from Mitzrayim, we have now a special element of rachamim, of slicha, that in terms of the bris itself, that would not do it, because the bris itself is based on the fact that we really come to Hashem with a contrite heart and we want to do tshuva. Here we have, in the comparison to Mitzrayim, kasher nasos olam hazeh Mitzrayim is a whole new madrega. And it's before the bris. It's independent of the bris. But the question that we want to ask is, so what are these two categories? Category number one is the bris. Right, we say about the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim, bris krusa she'enam chozro, enam chozros reikam. And now we have kasher nasasam kibitzrayim, meaning even if they're not royalist law. So to give a little bit of a deeper insight, we're going to take a look at a kash of Rabbi Kivege. The Rambam in the second perek of Hilchas Tshuva writes that aval hatzibur calls mancha osim tshuva v'tzoakim b'lev sholem heim ne'anim. Shenemar, ki Hashem Elokeinu b'chol kareinu elav. So the Rambam interprets this pasuk of Hashem Elokeinu b'chol kareinu elav as a reference to the tzibur, because it says it in plural, and we're talking about kareinu elav means tzakim, tzaka. When the tzibur comes and cries out to Hashem, then God will respond to them. And that's a halacha that's codified by the Rambam in Hilchas Tshuva. And the Rambam writes, "V'tzaakim b'leiv shalem." There's a condition here that the tzaaka of the tzibur has to be very sincere. And here's where Rabbi Kiveger asks his kasha. The Gemara in Tainus on Daf Ches speaks about the unique nature and power of tefillah b'tzibur, and the Gemara says, "Nishmas af kishein b'leiv shalem." That with regard to the tzibur, the power of the prayer of the tzibur, the communal prayer, is such that it's received on high, even without a lev shalem. The Rambam here says that tzakim b'lev shalem, that we need a tzakim b'lev shalem. Now let's suggest the following. The Rambam in Hilchas Tshuva might be referring to the Bris Krusa on Yud Gimel Midas Harachim, She'enom Chozros Reikam. And the pasuk, the source in the Torah for this Bris Krusa, is this pasuk B'chol Kareinu Elav, as the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah. So the Rambam writes, we need a tefillah b'lev shalem in order to generate the Bris Krusa. Now you'll ask me, Rav Kiveger's kasha, but the Gemara says that tefillas hatzibur nishmas tamid, even if it's not b'lev shalem. Enochinami, that's on a, shall we say, an infrequent basis, meaning on an occasional basis. Occasionally Hashem will respond to the tefillas hatzibur, even without a lev shalem, but that's not the bris. There's no absolute upfront commitment on the part of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Say priori, I can't guarantee you that Hashem will respond and hearken to the tefillah of the community even without a lev shalem. That I can't guarantee you. If it's a lev shalem, then it's a bris krusa, v'yedem chozus reikam. So now let's go back to our original pasuk that you have in front of you in Parsha Shlach. And it says over there in the pasuk, kasher nasasa. And we were wondering what kasher nasasa adds over here. So it could be that according to what the Bris Kerov says, the kasher nasasa means even if einam ra'uyim, they're not roy, so the bris itself would not kick in, so to speak, would not apply here. But nevertheless, there are times, there are moments in Jewish history where Hashem responds, even if we don't have a full tshuva, or we don't have a tefillah b'lev shalem, even though we're not roy l'slach. So the original bris of Yud Gimel Midas Harachim, that's only when we come with a sincere heart. That's called a lev shalem. And we're ready and we're involved in doing tshuva. But now we have another madrega. Again, it's not guaranteed, but certain points in Jewish history, we have something called a power of the tefillah of the tzibur, which is called kasher nasasa. So again, it's not kigodol chazdecha. We're not talking b'chol kareinu elav. B'chol kareinu elav, but whenever we cry out to him in sincerity. But now we're talking about kasher nasasa alam azeb mitzrayim. That if there's tefillah, even in the absence of full tshuva, in the absence of full tefillah b'lev shalem, nevertheless, although we're not royal islach and the bris will not kick in, nevertheless Hashem will atone for us, He'll forgive us, like He did before the bris in the case of Mitzrayim. Okay. Now there's a Vilna Gaon in Parshas Vayelech.
The next pasuk is Yomar Hashem Shalach LeKidvarach.
So I'm not sure what that means. Is it Vayomer Hashem Salat Kidvarecha based on Kigodol Chazdecha, which would mean the bris, and Lechora? I don't know. You have to assume, you have to go through the parish very carefully. Did the people of Israel undergo tshuva in a full sense? It sounds like they did, because you remember the word Vayisabolu over there? It's in Perek Lamed Gimel? Anyway, there's a word Vayisabolu there.
This is in Perek Yud Dalet.
Right. The pasuk by Yisabolo is actually in Parashas Kitisa, I think. But in any event, we have to see exactly what's going on when he says Solachti Kidvarecha. So the Gaon in Parshas Vayelech on the pasuk of Anochi Astir Haster Astir Espanai Bayom Ahu, and the Gaon wants to know about this double language Haster Astir. He says Hine Zuas Kefel Omro. If not for the fact that the pasuk repeats itself, right, this double language of Haster Astir. Yifla gamkein me'aroy lemichtav o haster haster o ester astir. He says it would have been more appropriate if the pasuk would have said haster hastir or astir astir, meaning either it's in the active verb or it's describing a reality. But the double language here, haster, which means hester ponim, and then it says astir in the active. That's a bit strange, says the Gaon. Achine yodua shehauma hayisraelis am kadosh kishiyad Hashem nogea b'hem chas v'shol v'kol kol Yaakov b'tfila yecholim lishbar mechitzos shel barzel hamafsikos beinom levein avim shebashamayim. So the people of Israel are endowed with this special power of Hakol Kol Yaakov, of Tefillah, that they can break through all these separations of Barzel, which separate them and distance them from their Father in heaven. Ach Narpis Heim Nirpim Heim Nirpim Milavakesh Melokeinu Al Zos. Very often we are inhibited and we don't ask Hashem Ki Mikrahu, because we don't realize that what's befalling us and the tragedies that happen and occur are divinely the part of divine supervision, and we think it's mikrehu, it's alpi sidur hativi, it's part of the natural cause and effect relationship of the universe. Velo al zeh hashgach, it's not a result of divine providence. V'zeu anochi haster dover me'itam. In other words, I'm not going to show or demonstrate clearly that what's happening to you is my retribution, my punishment. And therefore, astir ponai mehem, which means what's a lomish astir mehem shelo yavinu, I will make it very challenging, very difficult for them to understand. I'm not going to reveal to them that the reason why they're in this state of trouble, of anxiety, of difficulty, is because I was master my face. I hid my face from them. So they don't realize this. They think it's part of the natural course of events. So they won't ask for mercy. And what's Hashem's purpose here in this Aster Aster Panikideshi Kablu Onsham? And therefore they will receive their punishment because they're not crying out to Hashem for Racham. And the Gaon now quotes the Halach of Choftal Dvarim HaMa'akvim Es HaTshuva. There are 24 categories of things that are Ma'akvim Es HaTshuva. Kilomoli Yavinu Yavatlu Tfilosam Akzera. If they would understand and see the deeper meaning that what's happening, what's befalling them, is because of divine providence and Hester Panim, they would certainly be mispalel, and the tefillah could be mevatel the gzerah. I don't want to be mevatel the gzerah, says Hashem, and therefore I'm going to be master. So it's a Hester Panim, and then Aster Esponai. Hashem is actively being masped. So when the pasuk says nirpim heim nirpim milavakesh, it means even though they are mispalel, but it means they're not mispalel b'lev sholem, because they think ki choshvin shesibos mo'ilim. Now, the cause and effect relationship to the natural order of events is what's causing their troubles, so they don't come with the lev sholem. Al kein, eino nitzolim. They won't be saved. Why? Da'abris krusa hi rakim shemispal in b'leiv shalem. So Hashem doesn't even want to give them an option to do tshuva and be mispal in b'leiv shalem, because then he would have to activate the bris, and he would rescind and revoke this gzera. So he wants the gzera to be so strong that he hides his hand in nature, and therefore they don't have a leiv shalem. So again, it could be that at certain periods of time Hashem would spare them, even though they don't have a leiv shalem. But in this case of Hester Ponim, where Hashem's purpose and his goal is to prevent them from doing a tshuva, he doesn't want to be mevatel gzeira, so Hashem hides his face, and instead of the people of Israel being able to claim and activate the bris because they have a tefillah b'leiv shalem, all they have is what we said before, the pasuk of Kasher Nasasalam Azemi Mitzrayim, which is not a guarantee, and which occasionally could be meaningful when they come Shalom B'leiv Shalom. But Hashem says in this case of Hester Ponim, if they're not coming with the bris and they don't come B'leiv Shalom, I'm not going to forgive them, I'm not going to have compassion on them. Alright, I think we'll take a break now, and we'll go back to Masechta Megillah. Yesterday we started the Agavata on Daf Yud Amud Beis, and today Mitzvah Hashem will continue. So we're up to Amrav Levi. Let's see if I can tell you where it is. Just one second. Omar Ablevi. I'm going to mark it here with my pen and then tell you where it is. Because there are a number of statements. Omar Ablevi. Let's see.
Marked out. Omar Ablevi. Davazimasaurus. The Odenum. The
Just one second. Again, there are a lot of Omar Ablevi's. Masaurus. The one we got up to is starts with, I mean, the line in the Gemara starts with Vayehi Bimei Yehoyakim. So if you're looking, you know, this is a very interesting Surah Sadaf in the classical Gemaras. So if you're looking in the middle of the daf with the wide lines, it's smack in the middle there. So the line starts by Hebi Mael Yakim. We're going to start with Amar Rabbi Levi.
Yeah, that's where I was.
Okay, good. There's no way I could have known that, because again, Amar Rabbi Levi appears over and over again. You weren't with us yesterday, so I don't know how you guessed we were up to.
Because the Gemara is now laid out.
Right.
So I know that there's a bet, that means that there's a new section.
Yeah, but again, I stop even in the middle of the section. Right. Whenever the clock strikes, you know, 8:15. Anyway, Omar Ablevi, Dover Zen Mesoris Biyadeh Me'avosenu, She'amotz, right, Yeshaya Hanavi is Yeshaya Ben Amotz, his father's Amotz, V'Amatzio, and Amatzio, who is the king of Yehuda, Achim Havu, they were brothers. Now, this is very interesting, because Amatzia is what's called, he's called Migeza Malchus Beis David. He is an offspring, a descendant of David. And now we could say about Yeshayo and his father Amotz that they too are descendants of David. And how do we know this? Based on this Mesores, that Amotz is a brother of Amatzia. If he's a brother of Amatzia, then obviously he comes from Malchus Beis David. So the Gemara wants to know, Maika Mashmalon, what is the thrust of what Rabbi Levi wants to teach us here? There must be some moral lesson to be derived. He says, Ki yehod amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, amar Rabbi Yonasan, kol kala sheitznua bebeis chamiha, this is going to be an allusion to Tamar and her relationship to Yehuda. And she was very tznua when she was in the house of her father-in-law, meaning the house of Yehuda. Is zocha V'yotze mimenu melachim u'neviim. So we have to emphasize these two categories, melachim and neviim. How are we doing today, gentlemen? Okay. So the Gemara says, Minolan. How do we know such a thing? How do we know that if a kala, a daughter-in-law, is modest in the house of her father-in-law, she will merit having kings and prophets coming from her descendants amongst them? Mitamar. So we're talking about the daughter-in-law of Yehuda, the Chassid. The pasuk says, "Vayir'eha Yehuda, vayachsheveha lezona, ki kisasa paneha." Now, if you read this pasuk literally and translate, it doesn't make any sense. That the key, right? I don't mean K-E-Y, I mean Chaf Yud. The key is coming to explain how Yehuda recognized her as a zona. And the answer is because she covered her face. So the Gemara immediately asks, "Mishum de kisa panem ayachshavel zona." On the contrary, you know, derech tznius is to cover your face, but not a zona. A zona wants to be attractive, right? Alluring. Ella. So the Gemara reinterprets this pasuk, and you have to read it in the following way: this woman, and again, there was Yehuda did not recognize her, obviously, as Tamar. She sat bepesach einayim, meaning she sat there at the crossroads, wherever the people went on the road, and she didn't cover her hair. But the reason why Yehuda could not recognize him, imagine, he's looking at his own daughter-in-law in the face and he doesn't recognize her. How's that possible? Mishum the kisses upon him beis chameha. In other words, what you have to interpret here is not that the kisses upon him means now when Yehuda encounters her and she's soliciting him, right? She's a zona. But rather, kisa panem means way back when in Beis Chamir. V'lavi yadale. Could you imagine? She lived in the house of Yehuda and Yehuda didn't recognize her. This reminds me of the Gemara about Sarah Yimeinu, that, you know, Avram didn't know that how beautiful his wife was until he saw her reflection in the water. So in other words, what the pasuk is really telling us here, testifying, is about the midah, the incredible midah of tznius of Tamar, that if Tamar at any point would have uncovered her face, Yehuda would not recognize her. That's how modest she was. And therefore, when Yehuda encounters her on the Eimah Drachim, and he thinks that she's a zona, and here her face is exposed, he can't even recognize her. So in any event, the bottom line is that Tamar becomes the paradigm of tznius. And what happens to Tamar as a result of this great midah of tznius? Zachsa v'yatsa mimena malachim u'neviim. Now watch this. There's a plural of malachim and there's a plural of neviim. And this is what the Gemara wants to derive from Rabbi Levi, that malachim is referring to many malachim, which means David. Now, from this relationship, with Tamar knew that she had Peretz, one of the two twins. Peretz becomes the ancestor of David. And of course, David is the ancestor of many, many kings. And then she has Nevi'im. Now, Nevi'im is in the plural. What Nevi'im does she have? So we know now, says Rabbi Levi, again, let's repeat Rabbi Levi, now Matzia is the king of Yehuda, and he's a descendant of David. So add David and Amatzia for our purposes now, and you have Malachim. She, Tamar, is the mother of kings. But now we're adding something else, that Amotz, the father of Yishayahu HaNavi, is the brother of Amatzia. So he too is, by definition, a descendant of David HaMelech. Uksiv, and the pasuk says Chazon Yishayo ben Amotz. So we have now Amotz, and we have Yishayo the son of Amotz. Amotz is a Navi, and that's the Chiddush of Rabbi Levi. We wouldn't have known this, except Yishayo. We know that Yishayo is a Navi. Now we're throwing in Amotz to boot. So both Yishayo and his father Amotz are Neviim, and now we can justify that Tamar is going to be the mother of Neviim in the plural. So let me read to you two notes over here. Yishayahu hisnabe bizman malchuso shel. Now, just for the history of it, Yishayahu spans many different kings, many generations. He starts his nevuah during the time of Uzziyahu ben Amatziah. Uzziyahu was king over Israel for 52 years. So somewhere in the middle of that period of time, Yishayahu starts prophesizing. Now, after Uzziyahu comes a period of time, this is 16 years of Yosam ben Uzziyahu. And Yishayahu spans that period of time, another 16 years. And then we get to the next generation, the son of Yosam, Bimei Achaz, Binoshel Yosam, he too reigns over Israel for 16 years. And once again, Yishayahu spans that period of time. So he spans part of the 52 years of Uzziyahu, the full 16 years of Yosam, the full 16 years of Achaz, and he enters into the next generation, which is Chizkiyahu ben Achaz, who is going to reign over Israel for 29 years. Now, at the end of his life, Yishayahu is actually murdered. He's put to death by the son of Chizkiyahu, who's called Menashe ben Chizkiyahu. Do you remember about this guy, Menashe? He's a real rush. In fact, that's why Chizkiyahu didn't want to get married and have children, because he saw in Ruach HaKodesh. That's also give brachas.
Right.
In any event, how does Rabbi Levi know that Amotz, the father of Yishayahu, is also a Navi? If you look in the Gemara says, Uksiv, as if to say, I'll prove it to you from the Pasuk, Chazon Yishayahu ben Amotz. So we're going to have a Gemara later on in this Agadata, about five lines from now, Kol Makom Sheshmo Ushem Aviv Binevius, whenever the Torah, when the Tanakh refers to a person as a Navi, and it mentions not only him, but it mentions his father's name in the same breath, is Biyadua, says the Gemara, Navi ben Navi, that his father is also a Navi. Now, as we said before, the Gemara wants to emphasize that both Amotz and his son Yishayahu are both Navim, in order to justify the Mesoras of Rabbi Levi, that from Tamar came not only Malachim, many kings, but also many Navim, many meaning, in this case, a plural number of two Navim. Amar Rabbi Levi, another statement of Rabbi Levi. This is number three on the list. Davar zeh mesoras biyadeinu miavoseinu makom aron eino min amida. This is what's called eino tofes makomo. If you take a look at Rashi, which is the bottom on the right side, Rashi says lechol tzadim klum. In other words, from one side to the other, we're talking about the Kodesh Kodashim. The Aron doesn't take up any space whatsoever. This is a great miracle. Yeshlo eser amos l'chol ruach b'emtza beis kodesh kodashim. Rashi says that the Aron is situated in the middle of kodesh kodashim. There are 10 amos in every direction to the walls that surround the kodesh kodashim. And yesh revach beino levein aksolam eser amos l'chol tzad v'chol abayis eino el chaf al chaf. In other words, this entire kodesh kodashim, as we'll soon see, the Gemara is going to prove this, is 20 amos on 20 amos. Now, it doesn't make any sense that the entire area of the kodesh kodashim is 20 amos square, and the aron itself is smack in the middle, but there are 10 amos in each direction from the, let's say, from the northern end of the aron all the way to the north, and from the southern end to the south, there are 10 amos. How does that make sense? You'd have to add a few amos for the size of the aron. And in the footnote, he says, based on a Gemara in Yuma, that this was one of the great miracles that occurred in the Bais Rishon when they had the aron. And the kasha is that the Gemara in Yuma enumerates 10 different nisim. So the Marsha asks, amongst the 10 nisim, we do not find this miracle that the Aron had took up no space. And the Marsha comes up with a new fantastical idea that there are two categories of miracles. There are miracles that are begolui, that you could see them immediately with your naked eye, like an H that comes down from Shamayim. And then there are nisim be'mechusa. He says that are inside the Kodesh Kodashim, and it's not apparently obvious. It's not niglim lakol. Then the Marsha wants to know, why this great miracle that the Aron is not tofes makoma? So he quotes a sugi of Baba Basra that Makom Ha'aron Vakruvim B'Makom Ha'aron Sharsa Ashchina. In other words, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to reveal himself and communicate with Moshe Rabbeinu, he did so through the Kruvim that were on top, between the Kruvim on top of the Aron. So that's where the Shechina is located. And we have a rule that whenever the Shechina, there's no Tfisas Makom. In other words, that the Shechina itself is not something physical, and it doesn't take up any space. And then we say, Malok HaLaretz Kvodo. And therefore the Aron, which is going to be the seat of the Shechina, says the Marsha, is not going to take up any space. Tanya Nami Hachi, the Gemara says there, I can prove this to you from a Braisa, like Rabbi Levi. Aron Shasa Moshe, that's interesting, when Shlomo Melch built the first base on Migdash, he still had the Aron. This is before the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And he had, okay, you guys know nothing about culture. Anyway, so, just kidding. I guess Spielberg would be a total alien here. Anyway, so the Aron existed for those 4 centuries during the period of Shlomo, and then it was Begniza. Shlomo already built a place under the Migdash for the Aron. And the Aron itself, Yeshlo Eser Amos L'chol Ruach. So from the Aron up to each one of the Kusle Bayis, there was 10 Amos. Uksiv, and yet the Pasuk says in Malachim Aleph, V'lifnei Advir. Lifnei Advir means that the karka that was in front of the Mechitza, which separated between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kadosh, was Esrim Ama Orech, V'Esrim Ama Rochav. So it means that the space in the Kodesh Kadosh was 20 Amos on 20 Amos. And yet the Aron was, as we said before, 10 Amos to this coastal and 10 Amos to the other coastal, Ksiv. Again, the same pasuk in Malachim Aleph, it says, Knaf HaKruv HaEchad Eser Amos. So Knaf HaKruv HaEchad Eser Amos. It means that the length and the width of the base Kodesh Kadosh was totally 20 Amos, 10 Amos in each direction. And Aron Gufe Hechavikai, then where was the Aron? You know, if the Aron was located in the middle of the Kodesh Kadosh, which was 20 Amos square, then where was the Aron? Elolav Shmamina, we understand like Rabbi Levi, that Bines Haya Omed, that the Aron did not take up any space. Okay, now here I want to give you a little bit of an introduction. This is the Pnei Yoshua's introduction to this Gemara. This Gemara is going to take us many, many blot. So we might as well get the introduction right now. There's a phrase that's going to repeat itself time after time after time. Each time it repeats itself with the name of an Amora beforehand. And Pasach le'Pischalai Parshas HaMehacha. This Amora, Rabbi so-and-so, would open up the study of Megillas Esther with the following analysis, the following drasha. So the Pnei Yoshua wants to understand, why does the Shas have to why does the Gemara, you know, Ravina Ravashi, where they organize this, why do they have to feel compelled to bring all these drushes of Amoraim, all of which indicate somewhere in the Mikra, somewhere in Tanakh, a remez, an allusion to the Ness of Purim? And the Pnei Yoshua says, Ein darka shal ha-Gemara lahavi drushos el litzorech. There must be, when the Gemara quotes a drasha, there's always some compelling reason for the drasha. There's some kasha that the Gemara has, and the Gemara answers this with a drasha. The Gemara wants to establish a halacha, so it has a drush. Says the Pnei Yoshua, all the Amoraim that we're about to learn are all coming to answer one question, which the Gemara never asks. That's the Pnei Yoshua's chiddush. Madua nichtava b'megillah kol ha-parasha shal ha-mishteh u'maisa vashti alo einzen ogelin yenes purim hayoroi lahaskel migdulas homon u'gzeiroso. Now again, you and I may know many answers to this question. So at this point we have to be very naive and we have to accept the question as a question. Again, some of the answers that we know, it's because of this Gemara that we're about to learn. But the question is, why does the Megillah start in Perek Aleph, meaning with the story of the Mishteh, the Achashverosh, you know, the big banquet, and Vashti is killed, and then we find Esther again? You and I have many, many answers to that question, but the Gemara is going to give us those answers. So any answer you give me now, I'm going to tell you it's going to come up in the Gemara. But all these pasuk like parshas, they're all going to look in Tanakh And C, like for example, the first one we're about to embark upon is to find in Tanakh a remez for Vashti, and that already sets the groundwork, the framework for the greatness of Purim. And the Gemara wants to know, why is this relevant to that we have to know about Vashti? And that's what we're going to have to figure out. So therefore he says that we should understand this Agadata, here on Daf Yudam and Beis and onwards, in the light of the Gemara back on Daf Zion. You remember that back on Daf Zion, the Gemara says that Esther she tried to impress the Chacham Kisvuni Lidoros, meaning that the whole story of the Nes Purim should be incorporated into Tanakh. And the Chacham, if you recall, were initially resistant. They felt that the whole story of Purim should be Torah Shebaal Peh. At the end of the day, they found a smach, if you recall, Ksov Zos Zikaron Basefer, and Zikaron is a reference to Amalek, and we had various drushes, you remember, we were racking our brains there, the word Ksov, the word Zos, the word Zikaron, the word Basefer, and that four times in Tanakh, there has to be a mention of Amalek. So the whole purpose of Megillas Esther in being elevated from the status of Torah Shebaal Peh to Torah Shebichsav was because of the Ma'ase of Molech, the Ma'ase of Haman. But otherwise, we would not have incorporated this book into Torah Shebichsav. So that's what the Gemara wants to know. If the whole justification is to tell us about Haman as Zaro Shalom Molech, and this is the fourth time that the Torah indicated we have to mention Amalech in the Torah, then begin with the Ma'ase of Haman. Why do we have to know the whole story of the Mishteh and the whole story of Vashti? And that's what this Gemara is focused on. And the bottom line, the final line of the Pnei Yoshua is Klomar, Shebier Madua Hutzach Lichtov Tchilas HaMegillah. The thrust of our Gemara is to try to justify why we need the beginning of the Megillah, since the whole Heter to incorporate the Megillah in Tanakh was Haman as Zera Molech. Let's start from HaMelech Gidel as Haman. So let's start right away with Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Yonasan Pasach Lei Pischa Lahai Parsha, so his opening drasha to what's called Igeres Purim, or what we call Megillah Esther, is Mehocha from a Pasuk in Yeshayahu Novi. And this Pasuk speaks about God bringing about retribution against Bavel, because Bavel was an idolatrous culture, and the pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi says the following: Vekamti alehem, I'm going to rise up against them, against the Bavliim. Vehrati leBavel shem usha'ar v'nin v'neched ni'um Hashem. So God speaks, and He says, I am going to undermine their shame. And then it says about Nin V'Nechen. We'll get to Nin V'Nechen in just a minute. So what does the word shame mean? Their name. Usually the word name means their reputation or their stature. You know, the Bavliim are famous for Zeh Ksav. Ksav means that every nation has its own Ksav. But the Ksav of Bavel was considered on a very high level. Now Rashi says the following. Rashi says, "Vekamti aleim." This is about seven lines down from the top on the left column. He says, "Beparonius bubble zaksav ein lem ksav elmi uma acheres." Originally, Bavel was endowed with their own ksav; they had their own language. And afterwards, when God meets out retribution against them, they have to, in a sense, abscond or copy the ksav of another nation. However, I want to share with you a whole nother approach of the Tosus Rit, one of the Rishonim. He writes the following: Kolzman shabavliim sholtu ba'olam, as long as Bavel was the greatest power on the earth, haya hadavar lekavod, it was considered a big kavod libnei umos acheros lilmod lishonam uksavam shalabavliim, to study the ksav, the script, and the language of the Bavliim. So I don't know if you can give a mashal today. Again, I'm a little bit prejudiced as an American, so Moshe, you'll forgive me. But maybe the English language today is very is very popular because, you know, the Americans are considered one of the superpowers. Now, if Russia ever takes over, maybe they'll junk English and everybody's going to speak Russian. I don't know.
If you live in China, as far as they're concerned, they're
yeah, they don't speak English. Although somebody told me that 1 out of 10 Chinese today speak English. I don't know.
They're still learning for international business because most international business is still done in English.
I met my wife and I. We celebrated our anniversary in Italy.
That's true.
This is when we first married. And it was unbelievable. We're standing on a corner in Venice, and no one speaks English. Today you go to Italy, and I would say, and maybe I'm exaggerating, that probably 2 or 3 out of 5 will speak some sort of rudimentary English. English has become almost an international language. So at that time, the Bavlians spoke Aramaic, and that the Aramaic was like the king of languages. But says the Tosus Rid, Aval Kishe Yardu Migdulasa, when God brought down Bavel, Hifsiku Umos Lishtalish Bishomuk Sovishal Bavlian. They no longer were using that language. Aramaic basically fell into disuse. Kevan Shibatla Malchusa. So this is the way that the Pasuk says Hikrati, Lebavel shame. So they lose their shame. Okay, now we go on. And then it says in the Pasuk, She'er. What does She'er mean? Zel Loshon. So it means there's Ksav, that's the script, and then there's the language itself, which is called She'er. And there's a whole discussion here about why the word She'er means Loshon. And then is Nin. Now, I don't know what art scroll or whatever translations you have of the Bible will say there in Yeshayahu and Novia the word Nin. Probably they'll say it means a grandson or a great-grandson. But Chazal understood a different shot in the word Nin. Nin Zem Malchus. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying that there's going to be a bittul of the Malchus of Bavel. The Bavlium themselves will continue speaking Aramit, you know, their Aramaic language, that's their language, but there's going to be another language that's even more important than the Aramaic language. And that's going to be the language of the whatever power, you know, is the Srara and the Malchus of that time. So once the Bavliyim lose their Srara, their special status and Malchus and their kingship, their language becomes their own language, but no one else on the face of the earth is interested in their language. And the Tosa Rid adds here the following: Afshem him shichul adab bilshonim. Even though the Bavliim themselves continue speaking that language, mikol makom shar ha'umos hifsiku lishtamish ba min hazman shebatla malchusam shal Bavliim ba'olam. So when the Bavliim ceased to be the major power, the superpower in the world, the other nations of the world were not interested in speaking the Babylonian language. But here we wanted to know, why is it that Nin means Malchus? What's the etymological explanation for the word Nin being Malchus? So Rashi quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk in Tehillim says the following: Lifnei Shemesh Yinon Shmo. Yinon Shmo means Yimshol V'Yigdal. So the word Yinon, and the shorish of that word is Nin, means to control, to dominate, to be a superpower. The Marsha says that no, that the word Nin should be explained kipshuto, and Nin means an offspring. Vahainu, shenichrasa malucha, because every kingship passes on from father to son, and again from father to son. So what Hashem is telling us in this prophecy, in Yeshayahu's prophecy, is that nichrasa malucha, once the malucha will be destroyed, then the malucha will no longer pass from son to, from father to son, etc., etc. And this is going to happen at the time of Belshazzar. You remember that Belshazzar was the one who saw the hand in his vision, and that would be, Belshazzar would be the last of the Babylonian kings at the time when Babel is considered the superpower over the world. And then it says, V'neched. Oh, now what do we do with the word Neched? Now, Neched obviously means offspring. Even Rashi would agree that. And Neched, Zu Vashti. Now, why is the word Neched an allusion to Vashti? And the answer is, who is Vashti's grandfather? Anybody remember?
Egla.
Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel. And the punishment that God is going to mete out to Nebuchadnezzar is going to reach its fruition when Nebuchadnezzar's granddaughter is going to be destroyed. She's going to be put to death. And who is her granddaughter? Who is his granddaughter? That's Vashti. So already in the Yeshayahu Hanavi's Nevuah, he's already prophesizing about the death of Vashti. And all this is part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's meting out a punishment to Nebuchadnezzar and Melech Bavel, who of course, you know, subjugated the Jewish people in so many different ways. And now we have another mandiyomer. We have Rab Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. Rab Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Pasachle Piskolai Parshasa, his opening drasha for Megillas Esther Mehacha was from another pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi. Oh, I thought he took me off the list. Okay. I'm just going to, sorry, put this on off. I didn't know I had to do that because I thought they... All right. Now, this is a famous pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi, which we recite, I think it's in chapter 55, if I remember correctly. They usually give me the honor of reading this pasuk on a fast day. So it says, "Tachas hanatzutz yaleh berosh, v'tachas hasirpad yaleh hadas." And then the end of the pasuk says, "Va'yol Hashem yudkei vavkei l'shem li'os olam v'lo yikareis." Now, this pasuk speaks about various plants in the botanical world, but it really is an allusion to the Ness of Purim. And how is that so? The word tachas means a replacement. Tachas anatzutz yaleh hadas. I'm sorry. Tachas anatzutz yaleh verosh. So there's some personality who's called in the cryptic secret language of the Tanakh, a natsutz. And that person is going to be replaced by someone who, again, in the cryptic language of Tanakh, is called Barash. So who is called natsutz, and why is he called natsutz? Why is he referred to? Tichsiv, another pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi, it says, "Ubechol hana'atzutzim, ubechol hana'halolim." And Chazal understand that these two categories, Natsutzim and Nalolim, are references to Avodah Zarah. And if you recall, Haman sets himself up as a godlike figure, and he requires everyone going by to bow to him. And now the question is, why these two words, Natsutzim and Nalolim, refer to Avodah Zarah? So for that, again, we look in the Marsha. And the Marsha says that these are different type of kotzim, of thorns and thistles. And he says, "Tzarech bir ma motzag mor raya," that the kavan is on Avodah Zarah. How do we know that these thorns are symbolic of idol worship? He says, "Kach sherotza lulma misham al kosek v'mudubar kam v'Avodah Zarah." And the answer is that it says, "Ubechol hanahalulim." And he says the Targum on Bechol HaNa'alulim says Bote Tushbechasa. Tushbechasa means where they praise their gods. So these Na'alulim, according to the Targum, are houses of worship. And that teaches us, or sheds a light on the first word in the pasuk, the earlier word in the pasuk, namely Na'atzutzim. The Gamzem Mairi, this is also a reference to their houses of worship and idolatry. And he points out here in the footnote that the Radak and the Metzudas Tzion, these are the super commentaries on Tanakh, they say that Na'alulim are Ilone Srak, Pchusim Shebech Pchusim. In other words, when you want to refer to a tree that's the lowest on the totem pole, meaning it doesn't give fruits, and it doesn't really, we don't get much out of it, so the word that we use is Na'alulim. So Na'alulim is a particular kind of brush or thorn, or thorn book, which we get nothing out of. And the reason why the Tanakh chooses this word as a symbolic mention of Avodah Zarah is to indicate that we want to make fun of Avodah Zarah, right? That it's the lowest of the low. Okay. That's as far as Natsutz is concerned. So Natsutz is a person who sets himself up as an idol, and that's a reference to Haman. And who's going to replace Haman? That's going to be Barash. Yale Barash, Zeh Mordechai. Why is Mordechai indicated by the word brush, shenikra rosh lechol habesamim, of all the spices, the beautiful smelling, fragrant smelling spices, the best of them all is called brush, and that's an indication of Mordechai. Where do we see that Mordechai is indicated, he's compared to besamim? Shenemer, the pasuk says, ve'ata kach lecha besamim rosh, mar dror. And the Gemara in Chulin is going to tell us that mar dror is a reference to Mordechai. And the pasuk itself indicates that you take besamim for mar dror. Umetagabinon, Unkelis translates this pasuk. Just 1 second. V'ato, I'll read the whole pasuk. Ato kach lecha besamim mar dror, chamesh mils v'kinom, etc., etc. So this is at the end of Sefer Shmos, and this is in the creation of the Ketores. And the Targum says mari doche. What does Mari Dachi mean? So Rashi explains that the Pasuk is alluding to Mordechai Tzadik because he's considered and compared to Besamim Rosh. He's the Rosh of all the Besamim, the best, the choicest of all fragrant spices. And Haman is going to fall, and who's going to replace him? It's going to be Mordechai Tzadik. So the Gdulas Haman is now transferred over to Mordechai. Then the pasuk says Tachas Hasirpod, and it says Yaleh Hadas, and this Sirpod is a reference to whom? Because again, we all know that Yaleh Hadas is obviously who's the Hadas? That's Esther. It's called Hadassah, right? And if you know anyone female who was born at this time of the year, meaning Purim time of the year, probably the name. Well. And the name might be Esther or might be Hadassah. So who's the Sirpad? Obviously, it's going to be Vashti. Tachas Vashti Harasha'a. Now, Vashti was really, really the evil. She was like the personification of evil. The only one I hated more in the Megillah than Vashti was Zeresh, Eshes Haman. She was the biggest, I don't want to say it out loud, in the world. But Vashti was a very close second. Okay, so now we have Tachas Hasirpod, Tachas Vashti Arsha. Now, who is the great? What's the great yichus of Vashti? Bas Beno Shel Nebuchadnezzar Rasha. You know, the richest here is mamish in the genes. So she's a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar Rasha. Shesoraf Refidas Beis Hashem. Notice he destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. So in the Marsha he writes, Hochochas HaGemar Himikach Shalom Mordechai HaYushemos Nosofim. The Gemara in Chulin gives a number of other names, you know, that are synonymous with Mordechai. For example, he had a name Psachia, he had a name Balsha, and other names. But we finally choose and settle on the name Mordechai because Mordechai indicates his godless, that he's the Rosh. Like we said before, he's the most fragrant of all spices. Now, where is the Gemara connecting the word Sirpad? How is the Gemara connected Sirpad with Nebuchadnezzar? So the answer is what's called Notrikun. If we take the word Sirpad, and again, here you have to allow for a little bit of poetic license because the Samach of Sirpad becomes a sin. And Sirpad is broken up into the following two words. Saraf, right? If you take Sirpad and you have a sin, so it's the first letter is sin, resh, pei, which means Saraf. And then the Dalid represents, if you start with the resh, pei, Refida. And Refida means the curtains of the Beis HaMikdash. Now he says that Matsonu Lashon Refida, the word Refida, which I translated as curtains. I don't know, how does he translate refida in the English?
It seems to say resting place.
Oh, this I didn't know. So in any event, he says the following, that Lashon Refida is not the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, the curtains themselves, but rather Tzipui HaZahav, the golden coating, you're covering over the Mikdash. And he and he quotes a pasuk to prove this. Kimo dechsiv, it says with regard to the Beis HaMikdash, refidaso zahav. Let's get the whole pasuk here. It says amudei, this is in Shir HaShirim, amudav asa kesef refidaso zahav. And this is all a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. So Sarpad is the one who sorev the Beis HaMikdash, and his granddaughter, that's the Rasha of Vashti, she's going to be destroyed. And who's going to replace her? Yaleh Adas. So Esther Atzadekes. It's so interesting how the Gemara would not let a name go by without adding a description. So if you take a look, for example, Vashti is always called Vashti Harsha, and Haman is called Haman HaRasha. Nebuchadnezzar is called Nebuchadnezzar Harsha.
They all come from the same family.
Right, but then we go on the other side also. Again, Mordechai seems to be the exception here, but in the Mefarshim it says Mordechai at Tzadik, and in the Gemara it says explicitly Esther at Tzadekes. Shenikres Hadasa, Shenemar Vayihi Omein Es Hadasa, He Esther Bas Dodo, which means that the whole thrust of this pasuk in Yeshayo is that Esther, I'm sorry, that Vashti will fall, and her gdula will be replaced. Who's going to fit into her shoes? That's going to be Esther Atzadekes. She's going to be Ola Gdula as a replacement for Vashti. Now Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni continues to dash to the end of the pasuk, because we started the pasuk, we might as well finish it, and it says Vayol Hashem L'Shem. What is the significance of Vayol Hashem L'shem? And does it have anything to do with the rest of the pasuk, which is all a prophecy for the great ness of Purim? Zo Mikra Megillah. Interesting. Vayol Hashem L'shem is an allusion to the reading of the Megillah, which means Pirsum HaNes. Because what is Pirsum HaNes? What's the purpose of Pirsum HaNes? L'gadel Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Olam. Right, like we say Kaddish, Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Mei Rabbah. So this pasuk Vayol Hashem L'shem, as if to say God gains a reputation.
Is interesting because his name is never mentioned in it.
Oh, it doesn't say Yud Kei Vav Kei there?
No, his name is never mentioned in Megillah.
Oh, that's a different question. I'm not sure if the Gemara is going to get to that. I don't remember.
It just says it shall be from a name, but his name is actually not in.
Right. But there's no question about it that we're going to see this over and over again, that the whole thrust of Purim is all about Godless Hashem.
Just interesting, though, that the reference is to it will be from a name, but his name is not actually in it.
Right. Maybe we'll talk about that. There's a lot of material here in the Sefer that I have on the Agadah of Masechta Purim, of Masechta Megillah. And one of the main focal points here is what's called Nes Nistar. You familiar with that?
Yeah.
Right, a hidden miracle. And the essence of Purim is the concept of a hidden miracle,
Ramban uses it in
Parshas Bo, I think,
no,
right?
No, Vayeshev.
On Vayeshev?
Vayeshev.
I know from
with
Bo.
With Shimon and Levi. Yaakov was upset with Shimon and Levi that they attacked, because it's not the time to take over to conquer the land of Israel. And so the question was, Ramban asked, why doesn't they kill? Why didn't all the neighboring towns just gang up on Yaakov? There were 12 guys, but we can all take them. And so the Ramban goes to the town, and it's a Nes Nistar. That it's
If I'm not mistaken,
millionaires kill us all. It can't. Right.
If I'm not mistaken, Ramban is famous for saying that Nes Nistar is even more significant than Nes Nigla, because basically everything, all of Teva, he says, is Nes. So when we see a Nes Nistar, that gives us the revelation that everything that happens is really a Nes.
So to be able to see the Nes Nistar.
And then the end of this pasuk that we started in Yeshayahu HaNavi says the following. It says, Li'os Olam Lo Yikares. And this Elu Yemei HaPurim is a reference to the pasuk in Megillas Esther. It says, "Yemei HaPurim Elu Lo Yavru Mitoch Hayudim VeZichram Lo Yosef Mizara." And again, we're going to get to a sugya later on about the fact that many of the other holidays, again, don't take this literally. Nobody takes this literally, but the Gemara says many of the other holidays would be batel, but Purim will not be batel. So that's Lo Yikares. Now, I just want to comment that what I find very paradoxical is that these psukim in Yeshayahu HaNavi, which I think is in the 55th parak, if you can check me out on that. Yeah. This is the kriya for what kind of a day? For a fast day, for tainis. And perhaps what we're trying to indicate here is that all these calamities that befell the people of Israel, and for which we have the four major tainios of Peronios, they're all basically part of a divine plan that's ultimately going to lead us to redemption. And that's what Zechariah Novi says, that these days will become Sosin L'Simcha. So I don't think it's coincidental that this parasha in Yeshayahu was chosen for the reading on a fast day. But it's interesting, you know, imagine if you give a klap af in tish when you read this Haftorah and break out in a song and say, well, like who the voice of the simcha v'sasa, you know, and we're going to sing a ala nisim on a tainus, you know, that's what I'm in the mood for. Yeah, I read this drush, I'm in the mood for singing ala nisim.
Spartan, we don't actually have, we don't say the Haftorah at all.
There is no Haftorah on a tainus? That's only an Ashkenazic minute. But you could take pride in the fact that you don't have this paradoxical situation that we have. In other words, there's no... Although, what would be the paradigm of a tainus of all the fast days that we fast? I mean, the most profound?
Yom Kippur. Which is not a...
Now, what does Yom Kippur have to do with Purim, right? The answer is, the Arizal says that Kippurim, that Yom Kippur is like Purim. So we see there's a connection between the two opposite poles here, between fasting on the one hand and all the excitement of Purim on the other hand. Rabbi Shuv ben Levi Pasach Lei Pischalai Parsha, so he began his drasha for Purim, for Megillah, Mehacha from a Pasuk in the Tochacha in Parshas Kisavo. V'hayak asher sas Hashem aleichem leheitiv eschem kein yosis lehora. What time is it now? It's 8:15. All right, this is a little bit more complicated, and I have a lot to tell you, so I don't want to botch it up. Let's end here, if it's okay with you, Rabbi Osai, and this will give you a little bit more of an excitement tomorrow, okay, when we start with this. I just want to make a note where we're up to, because leave it to me and I can forget from one day to the next.